WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively headed to Los Angeles, California. Super Bowl 56 coverage. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play with the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. And we have many, many prospects to bring in on the Crab Cake Tour. Don, you keep booking people on the show that I want to have a crab cake with during this time when we were masked up. We couldn't crab cake. But I have a feeling that this guest and potentially her husband as well will come out and have a crab cake with us before it's all over with.
I'm guessing that our guest has had a crab cake or two along the way. We are delighted to have joining us this morning Judge Katie Curran O'Malley, looking to get a new gig. You know, she's been on the bench for 20 years. We'll have her talk about her experience, but now wants to succeed Attorney General Brian Frosch, also a good friend of the show. So, Katie, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Thanks, Don. Thanks. I'm really happy to be here. It's exciting to talk to you guys, Nestor and Don, and, you know, I'm hanging out for you for about a half an hour.
So as a citizen, I'd say, what do you know about running for office?
Well, a lot, but maybe just too much, you know, which I think as a citizen knows too much about running for office. Maybe I should have ran away from this opportunity, but no, I'm really happy to be running for office as a candidate, as opposed to being, you know, related to a candidate.
Well, Katie, I think folks, you know, you've been in public life for a long time, or in the public eye. You've certainly been in the public eye for a long time. You experienced it as a little girl growing up with your dad, I don't think it's hyperbole at all to say one of the most respected leaders in the history of the state of Maryland, in former Attorney General Joe Curran. I mean, there's no one that ever speaks of your dad that does not do so in glowing terms. Let's introduce folks who might be. We assume sometimes inside baseball that everyone knows you, everyone knows who you are, and we know that's not true. So tell folks a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today.
All right. Thanks, Don. Well, I'm a daughter of Baltimore City. I grew up in Baltimore City and a daughter of two great parents, Joe Curran and Barbara Curran. And, you know, my father was the longest serving attorney general in the state of Maryland. He served for 20 years as attorney general. But before that, he was lieutenant governor under Governor Hughes. And then prior to that, he was in the state Senate for 16 years. He was chair of the Senate Judiciary Proceedings Committee. And back when I was growing up in, you know, the late 60s and early 70s, there were so many issues that came before his committee that dealt with civil rights. It dealt with fair housing issues, interracial marriages and things of that nature. And so he got a lot of people that didn't agree with his positions. He also was out against the Vietnam War, and he was also for funding for Medicaid for women who couldn't afford abortions, which in his district was a very strong stand to take because he represented a lot of Catholics. So he's always had this intestinal fortitude to do the right thing for the right reasons, even if it wasn't going to be advantageous to him politically. So that's the type of person. He and my mom, you know, that's the type of people I was raised by. Very honored.
Did you ever think you were going to run for office? I mean, you've been a part of so many campaigns on days from the time you were a girl. Now, all these years, is this something you ever aspired to that you thought 20 years ago, maybe I'll do this one day? And when does that seed get planted? I often ask the authors of books, when did you decide to do that?
You know, it's a good question because I've been a public service lawyer for 30 years. So I've been a part of working with the public day in and day out as a state's attorney in Baltimore County and then as a district court judge for 20 years. And people would ask me, did you ever think about running for office? When I first took the bar and passed the bar, I 3 months prior to that had given birth to our first daughter, Grace. And then 13 months after that, we had our wonderful daughter, Tara. And I was a working mom with two kids, and I was married to somebody who was also in public service. My husband, Martin O'Malley, at the time had run for state Senate, and then he was running for city council, and then he became the mayor, and everybody knows the story. So it really didn't make sense for me to run for office when we ended up having four great kids. It just didn't seem to be an opportunity for me to leave what I was doing, which I really cared so much about, which was for 10 years being a state's attorney and then the 20 years as a judge. So I always felt like I was a part of public service. But, you know, opportunities are part of what politics is about. I would never, ever, ever have run against Brian Frosch because I think he's one of the most greatest attorney generals we've had. But just, you know, I'm my kids are grown and I've got all this experience when it comes to the law and public service. So when the Attorney General said he wasn't going to seek re-election, I thought this was a great opportunity for me to marry all of that experience that I've had in the courts to the job of Attorney General.
Did that happen immediately? We've had Brian on the show, and I don't know, it's shocking that it's done. But when it's done, is that the next morning you're like, this is my chance? Or is it something that had to marinate a little bit for you?
Well, you know, you have to talk to your family and you have to, you know, do some self-searching and reflection upon why you think you should run for office and what you can give to the citizens of Maryland. And I knew that I had all this experience and I really had a strong desire to do that. But I wanted to make sure that my family was all on board. So that takes a few hours, you know, and when you take, especially because my husband was teaching in Indiana. And so he was sort of the last person when he came home. I wanted to sit down and talk to him after he was away for a couple of days and just say, hey, I think this is what I want to do. What do you think?
You're familiar with that chat from the other perspective, though, right?
Yes.
Katie, I'm going to run for president. You've heard that one before. You know what that family meeting looks like, right?
Yeah.
I was going to say that was might have been an easier conversation because you say we like Nestor said, we have had this chat before. You know, I should have said at the top of the show, Nestor, full disclosure, that I, along with other former Baltimore County executives, were proud to step up recently and endorse Katie. So full disclosure and transparency here on Baltimore Positive that
I'm still undecided.
I'm on team Katie. Katie, you were, you mentioned your experience as a prosecutor and as a judge. What lessons, and I think you're going to be asked this a lot on the campaign trail, and you and I have talked offline about the whole issue of public safety and how it's, I don't go anywhere. Nestor goes nowhere where people aren't talking public safety. What lessons do you take away from having been you were on both sides, you were a prosecutor and a judge. So what do you bring from that to wanting to be Attorney General?
When the Attorney General's office has many areas that deal with criminal law and criminal justice. But as you know, there's many other areas as well, the environment and consumer protection. But specifically when it comes to crime, criminal justice reform, I bring to the table being in the courtrooms for 30 years dealing with these issues and seeing what things work and what doesn't work. You know, as a prosecutor, everyone thinks like, oh, you know, you're a prosecutor and it's all about locking people up. Well, it's really not. It's about finding solutions for people, making sure people are safe, that your victims are safe. At the same time, looking at a defendant and trying to create holistic ways of handling that person as a, you know, whether they should or shouldn't go to jail, what opportunities would they have? Is parole and probation working effectively to supervise and get people into drug treatment programs? So these are all things that are part of my DNA because I've been doing it for 30 years. As a judge, when I transitioned to be a judge for 20 years, that was exactly what I was always doing. First of all, you have to call the balls and strikes. You've got to, you know, be able to make sure that the prosecution is doing the job that they're supposed to be doing, that they're not violating people's constitutional rights. And, you know, that can happen. And you have to make sure that once you do have someone who has been found guilty, that, you know, it's not about just giving someone the maximum sentence or putting people in jail. It's a lot of times it's about fashioning a sentence, like I said, as a prosecutor, that works for everyone, for all people. I sat in drug treatment court for 3 years doing just that. We had, you know, so many people in and out of the criminal justice system because they were addicts, and finding solutions for them, whether it was getting them into drug treatment programs, helping them find jobs and employment, all of these different things. And then I was a truancy court judge for 12 years, which was actually as a volunteer. And that's where I got to work with attorney generals when we sat down once a week with kids in the Baltimore City school system, finding ways to get them into school and helping them, whether it was because of transportation, whether it was because of housing issues, whether it was because of family issues, some sort of dysfunction, but really resolving problems with people day in and day out. And that's what I've done for 30 years.
Well, building on that, then, it's Judge, it seems like a natural progression. You recently released a really comprehensive public safety proposal that you would look forward to instituting as Attorney General. Can you highlight some of the key components of that for folks who might be listening to make it? I always call it, can we make it simple for them? You know, can we keep it simple so that they can understand what Judge Katie Curran O'Malley hopes to do in the Office of Attorney General regarding public safety?
There are so many things that need to be done when we're talking about public safety. And first and foremost, it's public safety. So that's the thing. And I think most people are alarmed at the amount of violence that's been increasing across the nation and across our state and my city. And so we have to find a way where communities feel safe. And at the same time, we have to keep police transparent and accountable. And we have to do that. That's a must. We can't sacrifice one for the other. You know, I think it's really important that we increase the funding, and this is an executive level situation, but increase the funding and get more parole and probation agents, because I can't tell you how many cases where someone's out on probation or parole and they're not being supervised and they repeat, and sometimes they commit murders. We've had that happen in Baltimore City with, sadly, Evelyn Player, the 69-year-old woman who was in a church where she was working, and she was murdered by someone who was on parole. So we've got to do a better job of managing that probation system. And I think by making parole and probation a priority with the next governor and talking about that as attorney general is something that I would work very hard for. You know, I've also seen in my 20 years as a judge, so much violence around the sale of marijuana. I can't tell you how many warrants I have signed for murder, you know, for search warrants for cases involving a murder that all revolved around the illegal sale of marijuana. If we simply legalize it and find a way to have it sold and give communities of color who have been disparately, you know, prosecuted with these marijuana laws a chance at entrepreneurship in these areas, we can create jobs and even a tax revenue. But the main thing I want to see is that we reduce violence around the illegal sale of marijuana. It's just, it's so sad. It's happening in my city. And I know it happened in Baltimore County. There was Atwater's at Kenilworth, where, you know, everybody's familiar. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, it's so safe at the Kenilworth Mall. There was a murder there, and it was all over the sale of marijuana. So I think that's something that the legislature is going to prioritize this session. It might go for referendum. It might become a law. I'm not sure exactly, but I think there's a lot we can do to end violence in that area as well.
Katie Curran O'Malley is our guest here on Baltimore Positive. Go ahead, Don.
I was going to say, Nestor, you've often talked about how you travel all over, and it appears that Maryland is behind the curve on that issue. When Judge O'Malley talks about it, you've brought that up numerous times.
I think we're at the point now where Colorado, I'm going to be in California all next week for the Super Bowl, places where it's been available, legal, out in the open, little green crosses started popping up in Denver almost a decade ago that we now have other places where there's some evidence. I talk about this with the lottery, with sports gambling. It's in other places now, and you hope to get it right once it comes here. But parole and probation, I want to go back to that because you talked about that in the beginning. We have now talked about this with your husband, a former governor. We've talked to the current governor. Every time I sit down with Brandon Scott or Jack before that, it's parole and probation, and it's like, here, it's yours. No, I don't want it. No, you take it. No, it's Annapolis. Well, it's a city. Well, the county line, Johnny O's involved in the Anne Arundel County. We're all in this together. What's wrong with it? Can you tell me what's wrong and how it can be corrected so that we don't have circumstances like the church murder?
Well, I can tell you the agency that it falls under. I mean, parole and probation is a function of the executive branch of government. So that's the governor's office. He or she is in charge of, you know, parole and probation and pretrial services when it comes to corrections. All the corrections, again, is run through the governor's office, and the governor gets to determine the budget. So the attorney general is counsel to parole and probation as well as correctional services and gives advice and you know, represents those agencies. But the attorney general does not control the budget, nor does the attorney general control the budget of the attorney general's office. But in asking for more funding for these essential services, I think, is really key. And I'm hoping to work with our next governor on that area to make sure these probation officers are not inundated with cases that they can't manage. You know, the pandemic really, really, really took a toll on the amount of employees in that agency. So you're right. It's not about finger pointing. It's about working together as a collaboration to make sure that that we have enough agents, that they're well-trained, that they know what they're doing. And my goodness, you know, we have so much technology in how we can quickly get information to judges when someone's not on probation, when they're on probation and they're not in compliance with their, you know, the terms of probation. We could have an email sent right now. You wait for them to send a letter, or, you know, it's just an area where there's so much that can be done with the smart people that we have in this state. And it is an area where you see a lot of repeat violence. So,
well, we're failing. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about it. We're failing. And how can it not be just a political hot potato that murder happens in Baltimore and it's the governor's city until the murder happens? And then, hey, that happened up there, not down here. And I loved when you say my city, because, you know, it's my city too. So I appreciate that part of
Baltimore,
it.
It is Baltimore positive. Yeah, I want to talk about the personal toll of campaigning and being in office. But before I do that, you made incredible news with raising an unbelievable amount of money. It's the worst part. I'm sure you agree. You've had to do it. Nothing worse than sitting down, making phone calls, asking people to support your campaign. But you came in with an incredible number, north of $600,000 in just a couple of weeks. Talk about why that's significant, what that says about support, Judge, and also about any recent endorsements that have come your way.
Thanks, Don. Well, as you know, you're 100% correct. It is the least favorite thing I think any candidate can do is sit and ask people for money. We raised $630,000, so I want to correct you on that. So that was a hard $30,000, you know, $630,000, and we're continuing to build that support, and hundreds of the donations were $100 and less. So that shows the real grassroots support that we're getting across the state. So it's not a bunch of, you know, PAC money and whatnot. It's really from supporters that care about the campaign and are helping us, you know, by those donations, validating the campaign and the grassroots supports that we have. So I've been really very pleased at that number. And we're going to continue to do that throughout the campaign, because, as you know, campaigns are expensive. And last week, I was happy to get the endorsement from our former chief judge of the Court of Appeals, Chief Mary Ellen Barbera. She was the first woman to be the chief of the Court of Appeals. And she contacted me last week and said she wanted to endorse the campaign. So I'm so honored that I'll have her endorsement. I've had Governor Glenn Denning endorse the campaign, both the House and Senate majority leaders, Nancy King in Montgomery County and Eric Luedtke in Montgomery County have supported the campaign, and dozens of others. So we're really, as well as your endorsement, thank you so much, Don.
You're welcome.
And Jim Smith, the former county executive, and Dennis Rasmussen, the former county executive. So
we're proud to do it, and we think it's important to Baltimore County. I know that you know, others are coming on board as we speak. My question, Judge, becomes a real personal one, and I'll start with someone like myself who has nowhere near the profile that your family has had over the years, all the way back to your dad. And you talk about the controversial positions that he took when you were a young girl. I will tell you that even with my lower profile, it won't surprise people that every day is not a bed of roses. And there are folks out there who aren't fans of yours truly, and they will say really awful things on, particularly now in an era of social media. I will tell you that my family and my children don't like that. They don't like that at all. And you've had it 10, 20, 30 times what I've ever experienced. Talk about, as a family, how you all try to navigate that, because it's going to start again.
Really?
It's going to start again.
Yeah, like every now and again, something got back to me last week about someone saying, oh, the only reason she raised all that money is because her husband was strong-arming people. And the lawyer who was talking to this individual who was saying that said, no, Katie O'Malley called me and she asked me, you know, for a contribution, and I gave her a contribution. So he put an end to it. But you're right, there's going to be that. And you have to have thick skin. You can't be thin skinned. You have to kind of put blinders on and realize why you are running for office and what you want to do and how you want to help the people of Maryland. And there are going to be detractors, and you just got to stay focused. And I know it's easy to say that. And certainly when my kids were younger, we had, oh my gosh, an awful, awful sort of unbelievable rumors about my husband and him having children with other women. And I remember my son, William, who's now 24, came home and he wanted me to sign. My husband was the mayor at the time, and Will wanted me to sign his report card. So I signed it and I put it back in his backpack. And he said, no, Dad has to sign it too. And I said, no, he doesn't. He doesn't have to sign it. I signed it, enough. And I go back to doing a million other things, as you know, four kids and getting homework stuff done. And he started crying. And I just looked at him. I'm like, what is wrong? Why are you so upset about this? And he said, everyone in my class says that you're in a divorce. And if you don't sign this, if Dad doesn't sign this, they're going to think it's true. And I just grabbed him, you know, and hugged him and said, hey, it's just, that's the hard part when your kids get upset. But they're grown ups now, and they are, you know, they've been through a lot, and they're tough. They're strong troops, and they're ready to go help their mom.
Wow. I mean, I guess my ask of folks out there who listen, and we have folks who listen of all different political persuasions. Nestor and I know that because he gets blowback from sponsors.
I chased them all, Katie, but I didn't. It's like Howard Stern. They hate you. They'll come back longer. They will. They really. I'm 31 years into this. Believe me.
They have a half-life. And I just ask people that regardless of where you are in any race, to be civil. I think I had said to you, I called, one of your opponents regarding this to tell him that I was, you know, going that I'd had a longstanding relationship with you and your family, and I was going to be supporting you as Baltimore candidate. I feel strongly we need more females. I think we need more women in elected office. Not the reason to vote for someone, but I think we definitely need more women in elected office. And the person that I called couldn't have been more gracious. And I think we need to be civil. And I remember there was a parade, and I was embarrassed. There was a parade, 4th of July parade one time where when your husband was either mayor or governor, I can't remember which one, probably governor, and he was walking in the parade, and people were just ugly, and you had your children. And I can remember thinking, man, this just can't be what we do. This can't be how we have discussions about public service in the United States of America. We have to do better. We have to do better.
Well, I agree with you. And I think there's been so much divisiveness in politics and so much bipartisan issues where when really, you know, everyone says that we're all in this together, right? So there's no need to finger point and say this group of politicians is doing the wrong thing versus that group. I mean, everybody just wants people to work together so we can all achieve the same thing, you know, a safer state, a more equitable state, looking at these issues that we have to deal with, whether it's the environment, consumer protection, or criminal justice. Organized crime unit is a big part of the AG's office as well. You know, everybody wants to work together and achieve really good goals for Marylanders. And if you have to talk about your opponent, then you don't have enough to say about yourself. Right. And that's what always my philosophy. I know that's always been my dad's philosophy when he ran for office. He always focused on why he should be the AG or, you know, the lieutenant governor or when he was in the Senate. And I think same thing with my husband, Martin, just focusing on what you as a person can do for the constituents, because that's all people care about.
Amen. Okay, Judge, as you travel around and you're getting around now, I mean, you're out there, you're meeting with people. Take the temperature of the state, of the people in the state. What are they talking about? What are they sharing with you? What are you hearing?
You know, it's interesting. I have been doing a lot of Zooms, as you guys are doing, and I've been speaking to people in Baltimore City and in Baltimore County, Allegheny County. Everyone's worried about COVID-19 inequities and how we can work on resolving them, whether it's with housing or transportation and crime, you know, frontline workers and the protections that they have or haven't been afforded. And then all the COVID-19 fraud schemes that have been out there. So that's been a big issue, as well as public safety. I mean, I tell you, when I've spoken to pastors around the city of Baltimore, their number one thing that they say to me is, what can we do to make our community safe and also keep the police transparent? Because you want to, you know, people are afraid, especially people of color in communities, of the things that have happened over the years with the police departments. And one thing that the legislature passed last year in the criminal reforms package was the Independent Investigations Unit in the Attorney General's office. So right now, our attorney general has the authority, whenever there's a civilian death, to independently investigate that situation when there's a civilian death as a result of police action, so that the agencies are not policing themselves and that there's an independent investigation. And I think this session, the legislators are going to also then give the attorney general the authority to make the decision as to whether or not to prosecute if they believe there's been an overstepping of the police authority. So I think transparency in policing, because, you know, I got to tell you, we have 99.9% really, really hardworking men and women that go to work every day to protect in the police departments and our fire departments. So we really need to do better for everyone. I think having more transparency and accountability helps the police. The body-worn cameras has been a huge way of making sure that there's transparency, and it protects the police and it protects the public. So we need to continue to do things like that to reform our system so everyone feels safe. And sadly, terrific. Yesterday, my husband and I attended the funeral yesterday of those three just lovely, hardworking Baltimore City firefighters who lost their life just over a week ago. And so, you know, we have to do everything we can to make our citizens safe, protect our police, as well as protect the firefighters. You know, we can't do one without the other.
Go ahead, Nestor. I was just going to say it was such a horrific moment. And the only thing I would add, Nestor, as you jump in and with a comment, is we look for uplifting signals in the midst of tragedy. And when I saw that firefighters from around the state came into the city to cover station houses so that every single firefighter could go say their goodbyes, that was just a moment. And I thought, there you go. We've got to find moments that say, hey, we can be good. We can be decent. I'm sorry, Nestor, I interrupted you.
No, I just last parting shot. What makes Baltimore safer?
You know, and so many different things will make Baltimore safer. I think what we have to do, like I said, it's not just increasing policing. We can't arrest ourselves out of, you know, this situation. We have to find, you know, upstream investments and how we can do things for children so that, you know, they can grow up and have opportunities. We have to make sure that the schools are doing the best that they can, that our criminal justice system is working for everyone equally. And, you know, that sounds like a bunch of mumbo jumbo, but it's really true. There's layers and layers of things that'll keep the city safe. First and foremost, I think we have to make sure that we are going against violent repeat offenders and making sure that, you know, when someone's committing a horrible, horrific crime, that they are being held accountable for it. So I'm talking murders and rapes. And, you know, the domestic violence rate has increased exponentially because of the pandemic, because people are isolated, that, you know, people have lost their jobs, stress levels are up. So we need to make the courts more accessible. And we need to, again, just continually work to make our city stronger economically, as well as education opportunities. And I was talking to individuals from a union and saying, taking some of these vacant buildings that we have and maybe making trade schools, a lot of it's going to take collaboration. So because it's so complex and people for years and years and years have been trying to solve these problems, and we have to just keep working harder together.
Well, the reason I tied it to that, because at the end, it all comes back to crime. Like everything we talk about here in regard to the city and certainly the role you're running for. Attorney General candidate Katie O'Malley, you can find her campaign out online. Really appreciate time with you. Tell your husband I owe him a crab cake because we didn't get together during the mess in the last couple of years, but we're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. And I'll tell you, if I saw him and I saw you guys in a room, but I didn't say hello, the parts about the bay in his book and through his campaign and getting out onto the bay and eating legitimate crab cakes every day in the month of August. It was a treat. So cheers to him for all his good work on the bay and getting crabs out of the water for us.
Thanks. And you owe me a crab cake too.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's a threat or a promise? I appreciate that. Katie Kern O'Malley, she's running for attorney general here in the state of Maryland. Don Moeller, of course, is running for my partner in Baltimore Positive. He'd like to be out in L.A. next week running around doing the Super Bowl radio row coverage. All will be brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We're going to get back out on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're starting it down in Canton at Mama's on the Half Shell. That'll be March 4th. And then once we start eating crab cakes, I'm not going to stop, I promise. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.
Thank you.